Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents The Long Road to Gaia by Timothy Ellis, narrated by Emily Beresford. Prologue 1. The great battle fleet of the Kira down-jumped into their home system. It was a fleet which had never been defeated in battle since the Wars of Consolidation many millennia before. But now it looked like it had lost one, and lost it very badly. Not a single ship had escaped serious damage. The space marshal stood at his battle console in the very front of the ship, viewing each ship in turn according to rank. More than half the fleet hadn't made it, so his review was markedly shorter than normal. He growled, the sound coming from deep in his chest, the black and white fur on his neck standing on end. All ships showed the same. None had more than half of their weapons operational. All had hull breaches and were getting emergency hull treatments. Crews were depleted, physically lost when hulls had been breached. He shuddered for a moment, remembering what had happened to them, watching them die, and being unable to do anything for them. Helplessness was a new feeling for him, indeed for everyone in the fleet. A proud warrior race, once the glue which held the major civilizations at the core of this galaxy together, hadn't even had a word to describe this feeling. It was borrowed from a long-dead species, who'd known this feeling all too well before their light was extinguished. The ones who viewed, now long dead themselves, had supplied this word and others to the galaxy as some sort of misguided legacy. It was only now the Kira had any use for them. He knew there wouldn't be enough time to complete the hull repairs. The adaptive hulls, one of the reasons the fleet had never been defeated in modern times, hadn't been much use to them. If anything, they had simply delayed the inevitable.
Irony, he thought.
The single most important discovery of the race, in the end, had been completely ineffective when it was needed the most. He barked orders, and the fleet took up jump point defense positions, compensating for the missing ships. Again.
Last time, he said to himself,
the idle thought distracting him momentarily. He turned his attention to the ships ahead of the fleet, now behind him as his ship turned to face the jump point. Civilians of a thousand worlds, remnants of the great civilizations which had spanned the galaxy for eons, moved towards the sole inhabitable planet left to them. Around it, he knew were the stations and ships which had previously escaped the destruction of their worlds. Irony seemed big today. The species which had supplied the word helplessness had also supplied the means for saving stations, not that they'd ever known they had. For dozens of cycles, stations and ships had been herded here. This was the last refuge. And of the thousands of battle fleets which had given them time to escape, only the Kira remained. The Marshal sighed. This was also something new to him, and the warrior inside him berated himself for showing weakness. A channel opened from the planet. He startled when he saw who their latest leader was. Leadership had changed dozens of times over the last home cycle, politics becoming deadlier with each new setback.
Welcome home, brother. Thank you, brother, said the Marshal. How much time do we have? Very little. Is there nothing you can do? Nothing. You condemn yourself. I have no alternative but to replace you.
The Marshal smiled his predator grin. He beckoned to his second, who joined him in the channel image. Their leader looked at the second.
You are now...
No!
Said the second, the yellow and white fur at his neck standing up.
You tell me no?
I do. I will not take command. No one here will.
You deny tradition?
What use is tradition on this day?
There was no answer to that. The second returned to his station.
Brother, said the Marshal, you have a job to do. I have a job to do. There is not much time, although you have a little longer than I do. So this is it? This is it. We stand alone. We lasted the longest, but we will accompany all the others into extinction.
They stood there looking at each other for what seemed like a long time.
Contact!
Came from a voice behind the Marshal.
Be strong, said the Marshal.
Be strong,
repeated his brother.
The channel ended. He shifted his attention to the jump point, The area was already black, and within a very short time, his ships were all enveloped in the darkness. Weapons fired ineffectively. Hulls resumed taking damage. Weak areas suffered explosive decompression and allowed the darkness to enter. He looked over at his second.
"Who did this to us?"
he was asked. The second waved at the darkness outside.
"Not that. Who released that upon us?"
"They are long gone."
"I don't care. I wish my last thoughts to damn them for eternity."
"They will not care."
"I care.
For all you know, you were once one of their souls."
"The ultimate irony. And even more reason to damn them."
"Even if you damn yourself?"
"I am already damned." "Who? What did they call themselves?"
Hull breach alarms interrupted them. They had only moments left now. Their eyes met, and they gave each other the warrior salute for those about to die in glorious battle.
"Humans!"
he said with his last breath.
2.
Two beings stood in space, watching the darkness fall on the last habitable planet in the galaxy. The stations in orbit around it were gone now, and only a few hundred million beings remained on the surface. Their time was almost up. Some of them were dying as the last fragments of the stations rained down upon them. Those which could sought shelter underground. These lucky ones would last just a little longer than everyone else.
"Is there nothing we can do?"
"We did it."
"It didn't work."
"None of it worked."
"What happens now?"
"You will be next."
"How is that even possible?"
There was a shake of a head.
"How is this possible? All things are possible. This darkness has no end."
"Show me."
The two flow forward until there is nothing left to see. They return to the end of the Kira.
"Why can't we stop this?"
"This? There is no stopping it, but perhaps it can be altered."
"Then there is still a chance to prevent this?"
"It's possible."
"What did we miss?"
The two flow back along the timelines. It takes them a long time to work back to the moment of creation. Time for them has little meaning, though. Along the way, they revisit every place where they attempted to change the way the future went. Hundreds of situations altered. No change to the eventual outcome. All paths led to the Kira homeworld. Finally, one of the beings took the other back to where it all seemingly began. The two of them looked down at a planet, putting the fate of others to the vote. No one seemed happy about it, but the result was overwhelmingly in favor of the motion.
"This is what we should be changing."
"Forbidden."
"Why?"
"Free will."
"All it would take is for someone to tell them the results of their compassionate choice."
"Forbidden."
"What if I did it anyway?"
"Not enough would believe you to change the choice. There is too much guilt here. It is guilt, not compassion, which made this choice."
"So guilt dooms all?"
"Perhaps overly dramatic, but in this case, choice dooms all."
"But they never know it."
"No. Choices carry consequences, and this one dooms them in a more immediate way. They will never know the true consequences."
"Why can't we end them before they make the choice?"
"Forbidden."
"Of course it is."
"I understand your frustration, but there are fixed points in linear time which cannot be undone. This is one of them."
"So all are doomed."
There is a long silence.
"Perhaps not."
"Tell me."
"I cannot, but I can ask you a question."
"What question?"
"How many species did you not try to help?"
There was subtle emphasis on the word not.
"We tried for all of them. You saw it all. Nothing helped."
"Did you?"
The pause became a silence.
"Them?"
"Them."
"You have got to be kidding me."
"Do I look like I kid?"
"No, you never do. But with your face, how could anyone really tell?"
This was answered with a smile.
"Why should we save them?"
"Because they are the only ones you didn't try."
"But really, they were the youngest race of all, and the least technologically advanced. They were the first to be destroyed, in spite of spreading out over a standard number of planets. And the only reason this was allowed was because they were isolated.
They made one advance which no other species did as well. But it wasn't enough, because everything else was inferior. And? And they caused this. No, they were merely the first to create the great consequence of what we see here now. Had it not been them, another species would have done the same thing sometime. Show me. Quite some time later, they ended up back at the Kira homeworld. I see. As with everything else we tried, it all ends here. For them, it's a while off for you, but still just as certain.
But there is something we can do?
Yes, one last hope.
Save the ones who unleash this?
Yes.
What do they need to survive?
Not what. Who?
Show me who.
They move back into the past.
Isn't this a child?
Yes.
So we need to protect him?
No, you need to protect the legacy which results in him.
Why?
Because this bloodline didn't survive. This is a projection, not real time. What you see will only exist if you ensure it does.
Where do we need to start?
They shift back into real time.
Another child?
It begins with him.
Remind me what this species called themselves?
Asked one.
Humans, said Kali.
3. Two witches sat on either side of a crystal ball.
And so it begins.
Are you sure?
Sure as can be.
You doom us all, then.
Not I. The scrying globe merely shows us the most likely outcome.
But it depends on the question?
As always.
What did you ask it?
To show me the moment which begins prophecy.
And this is it?
Yes.
How can you be sure?
Because I've been asking this same question every night since prophecy became an acceptable question.
And you get this every night?
No, just tonight.
What does that mean?
Something in the cosmos just changed. Until now, prophecy had no focus.
You know what the others have seen?
Yes, our doom. But it has never had any focus for them either. They always say prophecy ends in our doom. They ask the wrong question, and are shown the end result of it.
And you ask the right question to get something different?
I ask the right question to be given the truth.
What truth?
That our mother kin interpret prophecy too literally.
And you do not?
No, I seek the truth, not something to use for political advantage.
And the truth is?
As I said, something just changed. Prophecy is still there, but it is not as it was. And unless those who seek change their questions, none else will see the truth.
What is it we see?
A child.
That's a child? Its skin is so smooth. It's the ugliest thing I've ever seen.
True, but a child it is.
Why a child?
Ah, now that is a different question.
Of course it is, but I'd still like it asked.
Well then, we shall.
The scrying crystal clouded for a long time, and they waited patiently. At last, an image formed. One being sat, while a triangle shape of the same kind of being stood behind. Darkness was before them.
What does this mean?
The length of time to obtain the image pushes the image well into the future.
How far?
The same as prophecy states. We will not see the darkness, but our daughters will.
And the image itself?
A single being will rise to challenge the darkness, where until now none has been able to.
The child we saw first?
No, but one of his line. If I read the scrying correctly, what has changed is the likelihood of this line surviving to produce the one.
How can you be so sure? You question my scrying?
I am sorry. So will we all.
Does this not now give us hope?
It is too soon for hope. Perhaps a hope of a hope.
Should we tell anyone?
Not yet. But this species is now worthy of our study.
What species is it?
I've come across them before. They are very young still, but even so young, the way they think gives answers we might not have considered.
Is this why only you have seen this?
Because you have seen them before? No, but perhaps it is because I do not dismiss them as irrelevant, as most above us in the ranks do.
But who are they?
Humans.
4. The Mage King stood over his scrying pool. He grunted to himself, waved away the image, and cast another question into the pool. A new image formed. He grunted again and removed this one as well. He turned and walked back to his casual time chair, showing the fatigue which came with complicated magic being performed. But he did not sit.
"My lord," asked his son, "what did you see that has you so somber?" "Gather my council, immediately."
"Yes, lord," said a bowing son, who quickly cast a summoning spell.
The two of them, son leading his mage king, left the private chambers and walked at a measured pace to the council chambers. All were present when they entered. The son took his place to the left of the mage king, who sat, signaling all others to sit. When all were not only seated, but completely still, the mage king spoke.
"Tell me of prophecy," he asked his first counselor. "When..." "Stop!"
Most of the council looked shocked. The mage king looked around all their faces, one by one, by rank. None of them showed any understanding.
"We know what prophecy says. I do not need reminding of what it says. You are all magicians. Have you not been scrying the future of our race?"
The son bit his tongue, having a glimpse of where this was going. The pain gave him something to concentrate on. There was silence for a few moments, finally broken from the bottom of the table.
"The future, lord? Why, we have seers for that. We know when our doom will come. What is there to check for ourselves?"
Lightning arced down the table, striking the young counselor in the chest. He was thrown backwards to hit the wall behind, where he slumped down in death. The table was silent once more, no one daring to even look at the punished carcass.
"You will all scry the future every day from now on. You will supervise the seers and exhort them to see further ahead."
"Yes, lord," said his first counselor.
"How far does the current head counselor see?"
2 generations, lord. In the 50 generations since prophecy was made, no one has seen further than 2 full generations.
"I have seen 3.
There were gasps of shock.
"What did you see, lord?" asked his son carefully.
"Hope."
"Hope?" repeated his son.
"For 50 generations, we have known our race ends in 3. My son's son will not be born. How can there be any hope?"
Instead of being blasted from his seat, his father's hand touched his shoulder.
"Something has changed. I was given an extra level to the scrying enchantment, which has shown me the 3rd generation from now."
"Lord?"
asked the first counselor.
"Our doom comes for us. Nothing has changed. But I saw hope that we might outrun it."
"Run? Lord, where is there to run?"
All eyes turned to the new voice, and the one who spoke visibly quavered.
"We will run to the stars," said his mage king. "The race must change. A way must be found for us to leave this planet and travel to others. We know other species exist on other planets. We must devise ways to scry on them and learn their secrets for travel. We have 2 generations left for this task, or we go meekly into extinction."
He looked around the table.
"We will not be going meekly into extinction."
No one was game to speak.
"Leave. The race must be retasked for survival at all costs. I will see your progress at the next scheduled meeting. Go!"
He looked at the first counselor and his son, biding them stay. He waited for the room to empty.
"We need a new branch of seers."
"Their task, lord?"
"I have seen a new species. We must keep track of them."
"They can help us?"
"No, but when our doom comes for us, it will also come for them. By watching them, we will have a last warning. And, perhaps, the secret of our escape can be found in how they attempt theirs."
"Who are they?"
"Humans."
1969. 1. The room began to take shape around me.
We don't meet very often, maybe once a millennium, but this wasn't one of the scheduled meetings. The form the room takes always gives me a clue as to what we're meeting about. The routine meetings are usually held at Buddha Amitabha's Pure Land. Lush green settings, with ultra-high comfort, but ultra-low-tech. This wasn't even remotely on the same level. Four walls in a beige color, floor with bad-taste carpet, white ceiling, long, thin wooden table with 12 uncomfortable-looking chairs on the other side from me. Single, even more uncomfortable chair on my side. So, a mission. I hadn't had one in a few hundred centuries and wasn't really wanting one now. Something was wrong somewhere, or they wouldn't be calling me in. I activated recall to figure out the planet. Irk. Earth. 20th century, at a guess. The room could loosely be described as early grunge. Painted plasterboard walls. 1960s, perhaps. Construction materials requiring some technology, but still relatively early. Pre-spaceflight, for sure. Not my favorite species, or period. A century in which they kidded themselves they were civilized, while systematically slaughtering more than at any time before in their history. Last time I'd been there, I'd developed a dislike for the species as a whole. The only thing I agreed with was the saying, "The more I see people, the more I prefer my cat." Cats were easier to deal with. If they'd become the dominant species on that miserable planet, it wouldn't have been so miserable. I already knew I wasn't going to be accepting this mission. Unless it was to save the cats from extinction. I'd go in for that. Most of the big ones were still around in that century, although heading for oblivion already. I knew the smaller variations made it into the next century, but I'd deliberately not cared where humans were going. Cats were worth checking on. Humans were not. Of all the species in this galaxy, humans raided down there with cockroaches, as far as I was concerned. They had very few redeeming qualities. Loving cats was one of them. I looked at the chair. Nothing was going to happen until I sat in it. I focused my will on changing the chair into something more comfortable. Nothing happened. Not a good sign. It meant the meeting was time-locked. Correction. Something had happened. Two more chairs had appeared, on each end of the table. These were completely different. Larger. More impressive. Bordering on thrones. Another bad sign. Obviously, some higher entities were taking an interest. There was no point in delaying. The only time being wasted here was my own. I floated over to the chair and sat. Sitting is a relative concept when you have no actual form. Contact with the chair solidified my form. As I suspected, human male. I know some of my brother and sister avatars loved the primitive forms, human especially. Their form enjoyed a level of experiential awareness which wasn't common in this galaxy. Personally, I could take it or leave it, and I intended leaving it this time. The Council of the Twelve appeared, all in various human forms. Their appearance didn't matter. We knew each other regardless of how our avatars looked. On the council, names were not used. They were 1 through 12. I was 13. The order of the numbers was in terms of actual physical size. Humans would call us a celestial event. Size was relative. A sun was tiny in comparison to us, even though their avatars tended to think they were the most important of all. But all they had were numbers. All their real size put together wouldn't place them collectively at this table. We came into being with the galaxy itself. Space-time kept us too far apart to interact directly. A good thing, too, as most of us were incompatible. Our power allowed us to create these avatars of ourselves, and we did so every time we needed to interact with each other, or the mundane species below our level of existence. 14 and 15 were continually pressing to expand the council size to include them. Personally, I couldn't think of anything less desirable than sitting on a council. There was too much to do. I always opposed the motions. The Millennium meetings were quite enough for me. The last two joined us at the table. They were larger avatars than our own, and not fully human. Both had four arms instead of two, and the male had a trunk instead of a nose.
We welcome Kali the Destroyer and Lord Ganesha to our meeting, said one.
It was going to be worse than I thought. Those two only turned up when galaxy-wide consequences were at stake. I couldn't think how such an insignificant species as the humans could have anything to do with galactic-wide consequences. In fact, the only reason for me being here I could think of was they wanted me to stop them destroying themselves. And, as far as I was concerned, they could do so, and good riddance. All it needed was a button press, somewhere on that world, and life would cease. The only reason for not letting it happen was the cats. Although I could rescue some, I guess, and give them their own planet. I was suddenly aware I was being stared at by all of them.
Are you with us, 13? Said one. Or are galactic events not worthy of your interest these days?
One looked like a stern grandmother, small female figure with steely gray hair and a perpetual frown. So unlike one's normal appearance. Maybe this was more serious than I thought.
What events?
I asked. Humans in the 20th century weren't going anywhere, except perhaps to their own doom. How do they affect galactic events?
When were you last there?
Asked Two.
You know perfectly well my last visit to that benighted place was in 1945, their time.
Not their finest hour, said Five. Why haven't you been back?
Why would I? You judge a species on how they treat their children.
So? Prompted Eight.
Throwing them into a gas chamber and then burning them isn't my idea of an enlightened species worth surviving.
Auschwitz? Asked Ten.
I nodded.
I can see why you think that, but judging a species on the basis of their darkest hour isn't the best approach.
Even at their best, they weren't much better.
That's because you haven't bothered to ride the timeline fully, said Nine.
Kali cleared her throat noisily.
We chose you for this intervention, 13, said One, precisely because you haven't seen what's coming along the human timeline.
Intervention? What could possibly be going to happen where we need to intervene with them? Or do you really expect me to stop them from blowing themselves up?
Others are going to do that, said Kali.
So what do you want of me?
You have a journey to go on, said One.
Journey?
I looked at them all one by one, giving them my surely you can't be serious expression. I'd spent enough time in human form to establish a good number of expressions for all occasions. Four laughed.
Honestly, 13, you are so human yourself sometimes. Perhaps it's part of you being the closest to them spatially of all of us.
Which makes it all the odder you haven't been following their timeline, said Three.
One stopped me responding.
The intervention required, One said, is not for some 600 Earth years. But to understand it when it becomes necessary, you need to follow the events leading to it very closely. 12 will be your supervisor for this task.
12 nodded to me.
You all seem to be assuming I will agree to this, I said.
You have no choice, said One. Your personal future is intermingled with the fate of the humans.
Really? How can you know that when I do not?
Ganesha stirred. All eyes turned to him.
You know as well as anyone, he said, that the future is hidden when your own fate is involved.
How can my fate be intertwined with theirs?
I asked.
That is the road you must walk to find out, said One. The road will lead you to a planet named Outback. Groups of humans are praying for it even now. Their descendants will get what they seek, but the journey is a long one, for Outback is at the end of their arm of the galaxy. You must go with them on the journey.
You're serious? Won't they find it a bit strange I don't die for 600 years?
They will not notice you. There is no need to be present for all of the time, just the important events along the way. You can take on different personas at different times, and sometimes will only require you to monitor without being seen.
What has the 1960s to do with any of this?
The story begins there, said One. 12 will take you there when this meeting is complete.
I haven't agreed to it yet. What if I'm content to simply wait out the 600 years?
It's my choice, as it is with all of us when asked to intervene.
You didn't come here to make a choice.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?